B-Pod Studios.
Hi, this is Kevin Owens, and you're listening to the Wrestling Inside the Ropes podcast with James Stewart and Mike Riley. Great name, Wrestling Inside the Ropes podcast. So what does that mean? You guys aren't allowed to discuss if anything happens outside the ropes? What if somebody gets clotheslined over the top rope? Do you guys cover the Royal Rumble? These are questions I need answered. Anyway, you're listening to Wrestling Inside the Ropes with two geniuses who came up with this name.
Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 985thesportshub.com and on the 985 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. Mike, a lot of things going on this week. We're going to do a few previews. AEW's got a pay-per-view coming up. The WWE has a pay-per-view coming up. You have a lightning round for us. There's some WrestleMania card switches. What's going on? What's up in the air? We have somebody who may have promoted a match that hasn't been announced yet on TV. We have our WrestleMania match that everybody should watch. A lot of a poo-poo platter, if you will, of things to discuss on the show today. With extra duck sauce, of course, on the Saugus wings from the Kowloon. There you go. There's your...
That's right. So, quite a week. We're here. We got two pay-per-views to go on the WWE side before WrestleMania. AEW is coming up next week. A show in Boston, too, SmackDown, and a fun time of year to be a wrestling fan. Really is. So here we go. Let's rock and roll.
SmackDown has John Cena on Friday night. But before we get to John Cena, before we get there, I do want to lead off this week's show talking about AEW. Their Revolution pay-per-view event is this Saturday night, February 29th, and I want to start with Chris Jericho defending the AEW championship against Jon Moxley. I think Jericho wins, and I think he wins with help from the Inner Circle. The odds have been stacked against Moxley for, you know, about 2 months now, I think it is. And they have told such a great story. Jericho offers Moxley a spot in the group. Moxley says no. Inner Circle spikes Moxley in the eye, which gives Moxley this great, unique look with the eye patch. Moxley overcomes those odds. He beats Jeff Cobb in kind of a fluky way. He keeps Jeff Cobb strong on his debut match. It keeps Moxley going forward. That's an instance there where a win and a loss doesn't hurt anybody. But the reason why I think Jericho is going to win is he just feels like a longer-term champion, and I don't think it's the right time to take the championship off him. I think the right time is going to be Kenny Omega, and maybe they'll do the November pay-per-view in Winnipeg at the hockey arena. You do Jericho, Kenny Omega in their hometown, and the crowd goes nuts, and it's split, and it's just an electric atmosphere. But I don't think that Jon Moxley needs the AEW championship right now. And he might not ever need it, but I just don't think right now is the time to switch the championship from Chris Jericho to Jon Moxley.
So, okay, so I'm with you there. I get your concept there with Jericho, inaugural champion AEW, carrying that torch. Honestly, like, if Jon Moxley does win, I'm not losing sleep over it. I'm okay if he does. I really am. But from a standpoint, a business standpoint, I think it does make more sense for Jericho to win. And I'm going to go back on what I said with a year ago for that 1 year anniversary for Jericho at one point a few weeks ago, him becoming the inaugural AEW champion where he would then lose. So Omega's a good option. And then, of course, he'll find a way to get back into the storyline of having another title shot. And I think it would make most sense for Jericho to also lose to Cody Rhodes down the line, too. What's beautiful about this feud with Jon Moxley and Chris Jericho is that if Jon Moxley does lose to Jericho, you could have a great rematch. You really could. That's the beauty of these two guys here. Continue to tell that story. Sure, they've had the Inner Circle offerings. Moxley gets poked in the eye. A lot of good things have
poked in the eye is understating it, Mike. He got spiked in the eye.
Yeah, he did.
And then John Moxley got to spike somebody else in the eye, and then they did a variation of a blindfold match, which was an ode to WrestleMania 7, which I loved.
Yes, exactly. So I think that, you know, if he is to lose, you could still tell the story a little more. Is it on borrowed time? Yeah, a little bit, but, you know, just get away with it. Maybe have the title change on a Dynamite show. But all indications are Jericho wins via help inner circle, maybe even a disqualification. It does make most sense for him to continue being the AEW champion carrying the torch for this company.
I don't think they'd do a disqualification finish. I think it would be a clean finish.
A clean? Okay. So,
And by clean, I mean a pinfall, Jericho pinfall on Moxley because of some kind of interference.
Dirty help outside.
Yeah.
Yeah. All that crap. Yeah.
That's what I mean.
Kind of like what we saw at NXT with the Undisputed Era on the Adam Cole match.
Right.
Similar to
right,
that.
Right.
Yeah. Because I don't think John Moxley has that many friends. You know, I think he's on his own there. So,
which is part of the character, which is why the character is so good.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So Jericho makes the most sense for him to continue carrying this torch here. And by the way, AEW Dynamite this past week, that was the best Dynamite I've ever seen.
Agreed.
In AEW history.
Agreed.
Awesome. Now, in Atlanta, the suits were there for TNT in mm-hmm. the building. Huge. Great.
Cody's hometown. Cody spiced up the show. Absolutely, yep. He did.
Tremendous show. Tremendous.
Good pacing, top to bottom.
Yep.
And speaking of Cody, Cody's got MJF at the AEW pay-per-view.
And I'm very excited for that match. I really am. And, you know, to touch on what you were saying with the storytelling of Jon Moxley and Chris Jericho, really good storytelling there. This has been really good storytelling, too. MJF and Cody started at the Baltimore show back in November there. And here they are when MJF turns on Cody, told it for a good 3.5 months with the stipulations, the lashes, the cage match, which was awesome. It was just a pure sports entertainment match. Easy 10, 11 minutes. It was fantastic. That finish, Cody going up on top of the cage. Go watch it again. I'm telling you right now, it is unbelievable. The awe of everyone in the crowd there. Had everyone on the edge of their seat with that, just the whole finish. And MJF obviously very scared for Cody Rhodes here for that matchup coming up next week. So I'm really excited for that one. And to kind of put a bow on the whole story they've told here the last 3.5-4 months. So Cody, MJF, give me that for Revolution at the AEW pay-per-view.
Mike, the story of Cody versus MJF goes back a lot farther than MJF throwing in the towel on Cody. It goes back to Cody saying, MJF is going to be my protege. Mm-hmm. And then they teased a few times where MJF was going to turn, and then the towel gets thrown in. And nobody saw that coming. I don't think anybody saw that coming, which was why it was so great. Some people are like, oh, it's too early to turn MJF. No, I think that they needed, if Cody was going to be out of the title picture, they needed something for Cody to chase. Because Cody is the clear-cut number one good guy in AEW. Just based on crowd reactions, I'm sure he's killing it selling merchandise, all that, all those elements that make a good guy a good guy. And so
over.
He 100% needed a villain to chase. And that's why, like, Cody's overcome all the stipulations. He hasn't touched MJF. That's the only one lurking right now. That'll be a big tease on Wednesday this week, I'm sure. But as far as I see how this match should go, Cody just needs to beat his ass for 10 minutes, 20 minutes, whatever the number is. And then somewhere at the end, MJF cheats and steals the match. MJF has to steal a win from Cody. Now, whether it's double A turning, which they teased during the steel cage match, never trust any Anderson, or whether it's the debut of somebody new or whatever it is, MJF just needs to steal a win here so that Cody still has something to chase, because I don't know where Cody and MJF go from here.
Right.
After I'm sure they do, but I don't see where they go next.
Well, if they do, that's where, you know, like they've even that was a serious tease with Arn Anderson this past week in the cage, you know, about to slam it and so forth. But it's also kind of been hinted a little bit earlier too, and that's where I wouldn't be shocked if he aligns himself with MJF, and maybe you get a tag team match out of it, MJF and Arn Anderson versus Cody and Dustin Rhodes. You know, the brothers are
Arn can't work. One, the shape he's in, and two, because he had the back surgery because his hand and
he'll be in the corner then of MJF.
Yeah, he'll be a corner man.
Put in the corner guy. That's all you got to do, and just you know, obvious turn right there. Anything along those lines, but it looks like it's inevitable when this is going to happen. Arn Anderson.
Yeah, because Arn being a manager just doesn't make for
no,
Cody.
It's dumb.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. It doesn't. It just doesn't, especially with Brandy.
She's
now,
back now. Exactly.
Being
yeah.
back.
Yeah.
Like, right. So now Cody's the good guy and he's got two corner people.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
It's a little much. But Cody's promo post Dynamite was awesome.
It's a street called Baker Street, and it is the exact spot. It is the exact spot I fell in love with wrestling. I came to a show, I couldn't have been 8 years old. And I knew that my dad was famous, but I really didn't know why. I didn't grow up in his prime. I didn't get to see a lot of the classics. I didn't get to see you break his leg, hey? I didn't get to see it. And I came to the show, and at the end of the night on Baker Street, it's where the fans will gather, right by where the boys and girls go out. And Sting. Sting went out. And you guys gave him such a great reception. And I didn't think anything, and I went to step out myself to go to, you know, my dad's truck. And he put his hand across my chest, and he said, "Never steal another man's pop." And I didn't know what he meant. And when he walked out in that parking lot, all of you cheered so loud for my dad. And I didn't know I wanted to be a wrestler, but I knew I want to be famous like he is.
Oh, my God. Incredible. Incredible. I'm telling you right now, folks, go back and watch that match. It was the best Dynamite. In fact, watch that whole show. Best Dynamite they've had since they've been on the air in October. And it's easier to, you know, put them up against NXT this past week coming off the pay-per-view, the TakeOver show, rather. But that Dynamite show was fantastic.
And the other match that kind of interests me that I want to mention quickly for the AEW pay-per-view is Kenny Omega and Adam Page defending the tag titles against the Young Bucks. And this is going to be knocked down, drag out, great match. These are four people who are all friends, and they want to tear the house down. I think the Young Bucks finally get the titles, which is good because they should be the champions. They won a battle royal on Dynamite to earn the title shot. And the reason why I like this Battle Royal so much, it told different stories within the Battle Royal that are leading to matches. And this, my friends, is called continuity of writing.
Yes, it is.
Not just throwing people out there, have them do things, and then forget about it. It's this is going to lead to this, and this is going to lead to that. And it's just, I don't know, it's easy. It's easy.
Yeah.
But again, it's AEW only has to write one show a week, and other companies have to write like seven shows a week, and apparently it's too much, and details, and GD Powell, they won't remember.
It's too bad the Young Bucks weren't the inaugural tag champs in the AEW brand, or the promotion, rather. But you know what? Now I think it's their time to shine right here. And these guys know each other really well, so I'm really excited. It's going to be an underappreciated match compared to the other top two ones there. So this whole card here, it's only four matches scheduled right now.
They'll add a women's match. They'll add a few more things on Dynamite this week.
We're probably looking at about six. Maybe seven. But yeah, but right now, it's going to be a good pay-per-view.
Look, if the pay-per-view was these four matches and you throw in a women's championship match, then that's a good show. That's 3 hours right there. That's all you need.
Bring it on.
Or three and a half.
Yep.
You could have two time limit draws and you'd still be okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. Good storytelling. And overall, good product of what you're having here. And again, they're going on the old WWF model of four or five pay-per-views. at the most on a year. So they're doing the right thing, AEW. Very excited here.
One show a week and a pay-per-view every quarter. That's all you need.
Yep.
Speaking of WWE, they have their Saudi Super Showdown, which there's only two things on this show that interest me, Mike. Mm-hmm. It's Bray Wyatt against Goldberg for the Universal Championship. And I think the WWE switches the Universal title here. I don't know that. I just look at WWE and how Goldberg segments have gotten buzz and they've helped their quarter hour ratings on SmackDown. And yep. I still think Goldberg has drawing power. And I like The Fiend. I like what he's done. I like the character. I really enjoyed him doing the mock NWO thing on Hogan the other day on SmackDown. But yep. I'm more interested in seeing Roman versus Goldberg or John Cena versus Goldberg for the title than I am The Fiend versus Roman for the title. I'd rather see Cena versus The Fiend for the title, quite frankly. And I still think that Cena's chase for 17 is interesting and it's a big story.
Mm-hmm.
And for Roman to win the Universal Championship, he's got to win the Elimination Chamber in Philadelphia. And then he's got to beat The Fiend in Tampa in front of a WrestleMania crowd. And that, to me, is just not fair to Flair. I mean, not fair to Roman.
Yeah.
Freudian slip there. and if you put Roman in there against Goldberg, Roman would get cheered for beating Goldberg. And, of course, you have Vince McMahon, whose ego is having Roman Reigns or John Cena beat Bill Goldberg for a championship. That's his WWE guy beating a WCW guy, because that's why Undertaker won in Saudi Arabia last year, because it's still WWF. I'm Vince McMahon and against Ted Turner's WCW, and that's how it's always going to be. That's why Triple H won over Sting all those years ago, and it's just it's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I think Goldberg wins the Universal Championship, and I think they do it relatively quickly.
Well, okay.
And by quickly, I mean it's a 2 or a 3 minute match, and it's spear, 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 jackhammer, 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 and that's it.
Wow. Okay. That's a hot take right there.
I think Goldberg just blows doors.
Wow.
Because theoretically, other than me saying it, nobody's calling it.
So, all right, I like it. I like your point of view. I don't agree with it still.
Please tell me why you don't agree with it.
Yeah, no, I'm going to live and die on the hill that I said that The Fiend's going to hold the title for at least a year and lose it at SummerSlam. That's what I'm living and dying on. But again, Goldberg winning here, I just think that the Prince has all this money. He's like, yeah, I like Goldberg. I'm going to pay his salary here to get him over to Saudi Arabia. I want him in my show. Do what you want, Vince. But you know what? He's going to be on my show. And I like The Fiend, too. And I want him to win the title. It's all about the money here. It's all this stupid show is about. Thursday afternoon, 12 o'clock on a February, you know, here we are. And now you're looking at a title change on a Thursday in Saudi Arabia. I'm going to take a hard pass on that one. I don't agree with that.
Isn't that how The Fiend won the Universal title off of Seth Rollins, Saudi Arabia
but
show?
But it wasn't going into WrestleMania.
No, but it's still, it was on the heels of the new Fox deal.
Yeah, but I just don't see that. Now, wait a minute. Was this after Fox? What after they debuted on Fox? I can't remember.
Yeah,
that.
Fox. The Fox debut was early October.
So it was November.
Because they had the draft, and then Brock Lesnar quits and goes to Raw, so they need the Universal title. And we had that whole Hell in a Cell thing where you can hit Seth Rollins with a mallet, but as soon as the sledgehammer comes out and he hits The Fiend, the match is thrown out.
So here's the other theory too, to help your theory out on that. With Goldberg winning, you don't have to give him a match at Elimination Chamber.
Oh, Goldberg would just zip right to WrestleMania.
Exactly. So that's one match you can take right off of the Elimination Chamber. If The Fiend wins, then it's expected that he should have a match in the Universal title department.
And you can throw The Fiend into some number one contenders match and maybe John Cena beats him, which I don't necessarily want. But if you're doing steps to get John Cena into a WrestleMania match, or you're doing steps into getting Roman Reigns into a WrestleMania match, there's a lot of possibilities.
Yeah, I just don't.
And no matter what WWE does, it's going to be the wrong one, right?
Yeah,
because
probably.
It's just they're trying to satisfy too many people. And yep. What they should be focused on is if the Fiend loses or if the Fiend retains, like, what is that reaction? What is going to be the WrestleMania moment? And this is actually a question I was going to wait 2 weeks on, but what the hell? So we were over at dinner the other night, and it was you, myself, it was Andy Wong, it was Joe Murray. And I shared a story that somebody in WWE had sent me a text message and asked me what I think the end of WrestleMania should be.
Yep.
And Mike, your answer was?
Drew McIntyre and Brock Lesnar.
And you think Drew should win the Universal Championship, and that's the send-off, that's the happy moment,
WWE
right?
Championship, yeah. Yeah.
And so my response to this person was, Shayna Baszler beats Becky Lynch with the help of Ronda Rousey. And the response I got back was, that's a perfect finish. a little bit of a follow-up to that. That finish is unlikely because I guess Ronda's all set with wrestling for now.
Yeah.
So that can't happen. So in theory, Drew McIntyre should close WrestleMania as the WWE champion, right? But is Drew McIntyre going to get that response where you're like, okay, I now go away from WrestleMania and I'm thrilled, right?
No. Mm.
And I don't in my mind see that happening. So now I go through what does make that a special WrestleMania moment.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it has been for a while. It's John Cena winning his 17th championship.
Well, okay, yeah. Now, if he is to, you know, come back and challenge it, sure. I was just going with the McIntyre-Lesnar scenario of that being a guaranteed match right now. Now, a lot can change here with Cena coming in, and I think that would be a fantastic ending. He's living in the Florida area there, not too far from Tampa, just outside. You know, home run of the record-breaking scenario, it would make perfect sense to close out the WrestleMania right there. However, though, if they don't go that route, then I think that they have to go on what they've told us for years. The individual who wins the Royal Rumble has the main event championship title bout at WrestleMania, and this will be your moment. And that's what the WWE told us, a Royal Rumble with Drew McIntyre becoming that superstar. Great character development, not the character development, but the way they just talked about him and made him that the winner there, a main event status. It makes the most sense for him to close out WrestleMania if John Cena does not go for that record-breaking championship match. And if he doesn't go for the championship match, then you're probably looking at the match we were talking about, him versus Elias, which has been talked about heavily on the internet.
So,
and I don't think that's going to close WrestleMania.
The main event of WrestleMania is a little bit subjective. Like Vince McMahon will tell you that, by God, there's three main events and you're in one of them, and you're facing Triple H, and that is a main event. And and historically, I think there have been a few instances where the winner of the Royal Rumble hasn't always been on last. Like, I remember Sheamus winning the Rumble and him going on first against Daniel Bryan. I think Alberto Del Rio won the Royal Rumble and challenged Edge, and that led off a WrestleMania. So there is historical precedent for the Royal Rumble winner not to be in the main event or in a main event as defined by the last match of the show.
Right. I mean, I just think that they'd be going back on their old roots here if that were the case. I mean, and obviously look at WrestleMania 33 in Orlando. You had Roman Reigns and The Undertaker to close it out right there. You know, that was not a Rumble winner in that scenario as well. But I just think that would go back on the old roots of how it has been told to us here. And if Drew McIntyre is supposedly going to be that guy, a big guy to, you know, go up against the likes of Brock Lesnar, then he's going to need to go on last to have that moment be his right there.
Unless maybe Brock Lesnar is retaining.
Which I would not be shocked about. I mean, it's crazy to think that he's been, he came, you know, he had a booming start, goes away for a little, comes back, you know, part-time champion for a little, and here he is still drawing so much money. It works, right?
So I mean, he's their highest paid employee. John Cena has called him the greatest of all time. Mm-hmm. I appreciate Brock. I understand what he's done and all that. I don't know that the masses do at this point.
Yeah.
Because he's just a part-time performer.
Right.
And I think that's the issue. But him being a part-time performer and there being other part-time performers seem to spike better numbers than the people who are grinding it out every night. And that's hard to, like, three SmackDowns in a row. Goldberg, Hogan, Goldberg.
Mm-hmm.
Ric Flair was on one of the higher rated Raws last year.
Yep.
So there's some, the Bellas were on this past week to have their Hall of Fame announcement. Those segments are all popping ratings. So there's something to be said. CM Punk for years wanted to be the part-time guy because they made more money, they drew good numbers, and he's killing himself every night. You know, staff infections, MRSA, all this other crap that led to him quitting.
Less travel,
And they're trying to help out people with buses. I guess AJ Styles just got a bus from the company recently. So him, Gallows, and Anderson all ride together.
There you go.
Which has nothing to do with Saudi Arabia, but that's just me spouting
still,
off stupid information.
Yeah.
The only other thing that interests me on the Saudi show is Naomi against Bayley for the SmackDown Women's Championship. And I think the only reason why this match is on the show is they're going to do a title switch here. And it's just because WWE wants to brag that they switched the women's title in Saudi Arabia, which is the dumbest bleeping reason to ever do a title switch, is just to say that you did it in Saudi Arabia or any other country. It's just dumb because I think Naomi and Bayley was penciled in for Mania and they switched it here. So maybe there's a rematch for WrestleMania. I don't know. I just think Naomi's winning over Bayley because they want to say that, hey, look at the progress we did. We had a women's match on the show before and now we have a title switch.
Yeah. Or you have Bayley retain and then you get Naomi into the women's elimination chamber. And she somehow wins that Elimination Chamber and gets the rematch with Bayley at WrestleMania for the SmackDown title. That could be another storytelling thing. But for as far as the title change, it's only the second time it's happened. You know, you had the other, what was it, back in November, right? The Saudi Arabia show. So you had one.
Natty versus Lacey Evans was the first women's match in Saudi Arabia in WWE.
That was historic.
Channels, even though other companies have wrestled women's matches there.
Right. So,
but unless WWE does it, it doesn't happen.
Yeah. Exactly. So for them, it was a huge deal, and you know the whole build up to that. It was kind of under the radar, I guess. Kind of last minute throwing to have them do that. And
well, they had sent women to one of the Saudi shows because they had approval for it, and then they got there and they didn't have approval for it. And this one they got approval for, and now this women's championship match they have approval for. So there's that. I mean, to me, the money program is still Bayley versus Sasha Banks for the SmackDown Women's Championship. And I'm hoping that, you know, Sasha's hip injury, you know, holds her out until at least SummerSlam in Boston, because that's the play. Sasha Banks, Bayley, it's Sasha Banks' hometown. She wins the SmackDown Women's Championship from Bayley as a babyface. Like, that's the play. That's the draw. And they could even have that one go on last.
Sure.
I don't think that they would, but I think they could.
Yeah, no, very easily could. And have a women's match close out SummerSlam, bring it on. Fine with that.
Hometown, for me, there are two matches for SummerSlam, and we're getting way ahead of ourselves, but there are two matches that I really want to see, and that's Sasha Banks versus Bayley, and there's John Cena versus Brock Lesnar. Those are the two matches that I want to see in person for SummerSlam. I don't know that either will happen, but those are on my SummerSlam wish list.
Yeah, and I'm going to add in Daniel Bryan versus The Fiend, and I want Daniel Bryan to win.
So that is the dark match after SmackDown this Friday night at TD Garden.
Look at that. Look at that potential foreshadow, huh?
Card subject to change.
Per usual, yes.
Per usual.
Yes.
So
Saudi Arabia show, it just like overall, Thursday afternoon, I'm not into this. But maybe that title match, that title change happens there and brings a little more intrigue. I mean, hell, Ricochet may put on a hell of a performance against Brock Lesnar. That could be the underappreciated match of the whole thing here. With that title change, that could be awesome too. Put him over a little more, give him a little more of a push. So I'm actually kind of looking forward to that. I don't think the title's going to change, but something like that, have go up against Brock Lesnar in Saudi Arabia, that's pretty damn cool if you ask me. I will say that.
I thought they would do Bobby Lashley versus Brock at one of these Saudi shows. Maybe they still will, but that to me is a match that is perfect for a Saudi show. Perfect.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Like we're not used to something like that before, right?
I know, right? Mike, do you have any other thoughts on the Saudi show before we get to your lightning round?
No, but I, you know what? Here we are, just Thursday afternoon, and then ready to see who makes it back for the Friday night Boston SmackDown show.
I know.
We'll see if anyone's held hostage. So that's the $1 million question. Place your bets.
I know.
And the weather's supposed to be nice, too. So no excuse for snow.
No, it's just a matter of who's being held hostage because somebody didn't get paid.
Yeah, exactly.
Mike, there hit me with your lightning round.
All right, let's do it. So let's start with this. The Bella Twins announced as the newest inductees to the WWE Hall of Fame class of 2020. Too early to put them in, or is now the perfect time to put them into the WWE Hall of Fame?
It feels like a good time. They're trying to load up to sell out that Hall of Fame show. The Bellas are still on TV with their own show, I think, although I haven't watched in a while. So they're mainstream. They are the definition of what Vince McMahon sees as a diva. And their work got a lot better when they were in there with better women's wrestlers. But if you're putting Coco Beware in the Hall of Fame, I can't dispute putting Nikki and Brie Bella in the Hall of Fame, because I think they did some good stuff for the divas. They set women's wrestling back years. But as far as being divas and being able to do what Vince McMahon wanted them to do, I think they did as good a job as they could, and they hit mainstream TV, and they got their own network show.
Yeah, and you know, you look at it too. Exactly, I think for the entertainment aspect, a ratings draw here for them to show that, oh, we'll put the Bellas into the Hall of Fame. I think it could be, you could put some other guys in there before them. I know I've been talking about Bam Bam Bigelow for a little bit now. I think he deserves a spot over them before they get in. But it seemed like this was going to happen sooner than later. And here they are. They do deserve it. But some other big name guys deserve to be in there before them. So, you know, congratulations.
And the question is, did the Bellas ever draw money? So going around to these WrestleManias, you see some Bella Army gear. But for me, Brie Bella versus Stephanie McMahon was a match I was interested in. Nikki Bella versus Charlotte Flair when Charlotte first got called up to the main roster was a match I was interested in. Outside of that, no interest. None.
Yeah. Yeah. It's make or break with them, I think. That's the whole point of it here. So congratulations to them. First females to go in for the class of 2020. All right. Let's go back to a little AEW tie-in here, because Rusev, according to a lot of rumor and innuendo, he's not too pleased with how he's been placed on the card as of late. In fact, this past week on Raw, part of a tag team match, and he took a pin in that match here involving with Bobby Lashley. He was also in that tag team match. His wife, Lana, did re-sign in the fall with the WWE, but the question is, should Rusev find a way to re-sign with WWE, or should he take his talents elsewhere to AEW?
I think Rusev hasn't been happy with his booking for a while, and I don't think that there's anything positive to come out with having your real-life wife make out with somebody else on TV.
Sucks.
It's not positive for anybody. Mm. So is Rusev going to AEW? No, I don't think so, because he's probably got a long-term contract, which he's probably in dispute about again, that we don't know about. And at the end of the day, it's where are you going to get the most money? if money's right. important to you, and it and you know, you it's as Jim Ross says, it's cash or creative. So Rusev isn't happy with his creative, so maybe he gets more money out of it. Hell, Sasha Banks complained about her creative multiple times and got a stupid contract, stupid high price contract. And I shouldn't say it's a stupid high price contract, because somebody's willing to give her money to calm down and be quiet and come back. And, you know, so she's sitting at home with a hip injury.
Well, the only other scenario I can think of here is Renee Young and John Moxley right here, AEW WWE.
Right. And, you know, and I don't know, have you listened to the AEW podcast with Shivani and John Moxley and Aubrey Edwards, I think was the female.
It just came out this week, right?
Yes.
I haven't heard it yet.
They had a conversation with John Moxley, and yep. Moxley essentially emphasized stuff that he's talked about in other interviews is, I went to WWF. I was excited about it. And then it got to, I saved money to get a truck that I'm going to drive into the ground. Then I got enough money to get a house. Then I wasn't happy with the creative direction I was going in. So I got out.
Yeah.
And it was a mutually beneficial relationship. They made money off of him. He made money off of them. It all worked.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a win-win. Well, for Rusev, as far as him going to AEW, I think that'd be perfect for him for a creative standpoint, and AEW grabbing someone from the WWE would be very beneficial. And back to your point, no one winning on the scenario of making out with the wife and so forth. The only one winning there is Bobby Lashley. All right, let's go to this real quick here. 10 years old, NXT this weekend. 10 years old. Can you believe it? So the first ever NXT, Daniel Bryan, David Otunga, Ryback, Heath Slater, Wade Barrett, Tyrone Evans, and Dean Ambrose. Now, there have been numerous superstars to have come out of NXT onto the WWE and even to other promotions. So, James, who is your who is the best NXT talent you've seen come out of NXT and make it to the main roster or elsewhere?
So I would say Finn Balor, but
really?
Finn carried that promotion as its champion, its first uptick. So I would say I relate to Finn Balor, but Finn Balor has been all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're talking about like homegrown from scratch, it's Charlotte Flair.
Yeah, well, I mean, just who have appeared on NXT in the 10 years.
But I would say that the two biggest... the biggest stars to come out of NXT are Finn Balor. Finn Balor is one. Mm-hmm. You know, Nakamura should have been bigger than he was, but that didn't happen. Like, his best match in NXT was his first night with Sami Zayn in Dallas.
Yep.
That should have been the one there. But as far as who have gone on to the main roster, yeah, I stick with Finn Balor.
Finn Balor. Yeah, I you know, I'm actually going to go Dean Ambrose. I think he had a really good NXT career to have done what he did on the main roster, WWE champion at one point, and now do what he's doing now in AEW. I'm going to go with him right there. Don't also, you know, Charlotte, we talked about her, but Becky Lynch too. Hard to discard
her. Yeah, the four horsewomen.
Yeah, right there. So,
you know, the
10 years young.
You know, the name that we didn't mention that we should mention, although we're probably not happy about mentioning. Seth Rollins.
Oh, gosh, that's right.
Seth Rollins, the original NXT champion.
Wow. Wow. That's crazy.
Crazy. And if you go through, like, but I don't think of Seth as an NXT guy. Like,
no,
he made a stop in it. I think of Seth as more of a Ring of Honor guy than an NXT guy.
Right.
But in the same way, like, Sami Zayn, former NXT champion. Kevin Owens, former NXT champion.
Sure.
Those were just kind of stops for those guys, I think, right? And so Finn Balor was there at least a year as champion, and people were like, oh, he should be on the main roster, he should be on the main roster, he should be on the main roster, and he wasn't. I mean, other notables are Tommaso Ciampa, but I don't think of him as a pure NXT guy because... before NXT, because he's local and I knew him before local, but NXT is it's Ciampa's gig for life, I think.
Right.
Which I think they're going to do Gargano and Ciampa, loser leaves NXT, and that's where Gargano gets called up, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just a guess. You know, Adam Cole is a big star in NXT. And he's had a few featured matchups, but Adam Cole is, I think he's like 40 days away from beating Finn Balor's run as NXT champion.
Yep.
So, like, those are the names that I attach to NXT.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Well, 10 years young, NXT. Go back and watch that first video if you haven't watched it yet. It's pretty crazy. The Miz right there going after Daniel Bryan because Daniel Bryan says that was his favorite guy. It's pretty cool how far it's come right now. So really remarkable 10 years later. And finally, over the weekend, Tyson Fury, winner over Deontay Wilder. We know we saw him at the Saudi Arabia show against Braun Strowman. Do we see Tyson Fury again at WrestleMania, James?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know that he's necessarily in a match, but he probably makes an appearance because they love getting that mainstream publicity. Yeah. He'll be in the corner of Braun Strowman when Braun defends the Intercontinental Championship. That would probably be the way that they get the Intercontinental title on the show, unless they do the Gronkowski thing and they put it on the pre-show and they try to get some extra buys. I don't know. But yeah, I see Tyson Fury as either at WrestleMania or at another Saudi show in like May or June or July, whenever they're going back there.
I just hope if he's going to be a WrestleMania, he sings Bye Bye Miss American Pie again.
By the way, what do you think about them doing the Cody Rhodes, Chris Jericho, MJF / Arnold Skoll and Bob Backlund Iron Sheik finish for that boxing match? The throw of the towel.
Gosh, yeah, come on, let him finish. I mean, listen, Deontay Wilder was like, you know, let me, what was that about? He was really surprised. But, you know, for the sake of, you know, not getting killed and so forth, I understand. Overall, though, it just sets up a rematch.
It's an easy story to tell for their third fight.
Yep, and that's what boxing needs.
It does. It needs a good trilogy. And if it was on a Sunday night, I mean, we're going to talk about it at some point this week, but throw in the towel. Nice nice comeback for that finish because we've seen it twice in the last 4 months.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate, yeah. But again, you know, we know why it's on Saturday nights because of the East Coast time.
Of course.
For Vegas. Yeah, of course. There you go.
I'm not staying up for a boxing match. I'll watch it the next day on TBR.
Wow, look at you. Okay.
New Japan, I'll stay up all night.
You're
for
in.
A boxing
You're
match?
In.
No. Like, no, I got I'll you. Watch it on replay the next day.
Good stuff.
All right. So that wraps up your lightning round.
Good night to that. Yes.
Okay.
Four quick ones.
Finally, hence the name lightning. Wrapping up our program is the WrestleMania match everyone should watch on our road to WrestleMania. Mike, the floor is yours.
Yeah, so if you haven't seen the first two episodes of Ruthless Aggression on the WWE Network, go back and watch it. Because this was, and the third one should be coming out, you know, at some point this week. But the first one, especially with that transition after the Attitude Era, I was a senior in high school when that was all going down, the Ruthless Aggression genesis, I guess you could say. And WrestleMania 19, a real torch passer after that Attitude Era. The year before, of course, and last week James talked about it with Hulk Hogan and The Rock, and here you are a year later with The Rock being a huge heel and getting Stone Cold Steve Austin in the WrestleMania 19 match there, where they told the story about The Rock not being able to beat Stone Cold Steve Austin at a WrestleMania. Of course, got screwed out of the 17 one via Vince McMahon. 15, Austin beats The Rock at Philadelphia, and here we are at 19 in Seattle. The Rock, at this time, he was ready to go Hollywood full-time. People knew that. He was just not a real well-liked guy, I guess you could say, as a fan perspective. Stone Cold Steve Austin, we kind of knew the end was coming, but just watching that match, I was, and seeing the end of it, really, really pissed, because it just seemed like The Rock was going to part-time, and here he is. He beat Stone Cold Steve Austin. Not knowing that was Austin's last match, you could just kind of see, like, he didn't have it in him. The hot air was out of the balloon with Stone Cold Steve Austin, and it was just one more match. I would have liked to have seen him beat, or win, rather, against The Rock at that clean sweep there. However, though, if you do watch the very, very end, after the pinfall, when The Rock is about to do his celebration, Austin lying on the mat, he goes over and he whispers to Austin a couple of times. We don't know what was said. I think The Rock may have said it a couple of times here or there. Like, you know, hey, you great career or whatnot. But he did show the respect to him there, which was a really cool thing to show after we knew of the egos they had backstage for years before. So mad at the time, but after that, newfound respect for The Rock of what he did for Stone Cold Steve Austin after that match.
To my knowledge, neither one of them has ever publicly said what specifically was said. I remember The Rock pushing Earl Hebner out of the way at least twice. Mike, I thought the WrestleMania 17 match between Austin and The Rock was better, except for the Vince Austin alignment as part of the finish. I do like how the WrestleMania 19 match was 50-50 booked. It's two franchise players. The Rock's oversell of the stunner was incredible. The Rock's reaction after Austin kicked out of the second Rock Bottom was amazing. And then the delay and the anticipation of the third Rock Bottom I thought was perfect. And I still expected Steve Austin to kick out because if memory serves me, and it doesn't always, I thought that I didn't think that this was Steve Austin's last match. I didn't know what the outcome was going to be. I didn't know what the finish was going to be, but I didn't anticipate that this was Austin's last match. JR has details in his upcoming book, which I'm told is a fabulous book, about that weekend and Austin being in the hospital, and he had too many energy drinks and anxiety attacks, and that stuff is all detailed on the Mania of WrestleMania, which is attached to the WrestleMania 20 DVD set. Remember DVDs? Is voiced by Jesse Ventura. I'm sure it's on the internet somewhere. I'm sure that I don't think it's on the WWE Network, which I don't know why it wouldn't be on the WWE Network, but if it is and I can't find it, then that's on me, and my apologies for that. But it's a really good pick by you, Mike. I think if Austin's health had been better, it probably would have gone on last instead of Brock Lesnar versus Kurt Angle, where Brock Lesnar wins the WWE championship. But that WrestleMania 19 is in the conversation with WrestleMania 17 as the best WrestleMania of all time.
Really is. It's an under the radar appreciated WrestleMania. You know, that Angle and Brock Lesnar match, but this one, that 19 one, I just had so much emotion to it with the Austin Rock. Here we are after the Attitude Era, very hard to transition out of it, but going back to my original point of the Ruthless Aggression series on WWE Network, go watch that. Seriously, watch it. It's fantastic. The second episode, too, heavy on John Cena. Really, really good stuff. I cannot wait to see the whole rest of this here. Again, underappreciated era in WWE, but also a difficult transition as a fan to accept what the next chapter was for the company.
Yeah, it was a rebuild situation. You lose Austin, you lose The Rock all within a 2-month span, and Austin had been on sabbatical because he didn't like his creative.
Yep.
Which, you know, that was his sometimes talent goes away. And it goes away, and Austin walked off against Brock Lesnar. His reasons were valid, but you can't walk away from the job description.
Exactly.
So my match to watch this week is WrestleMania 3, and it's Ricky Steamboat versus Randy Savage. And it is an overplayed match in the history of WWF. It is a cliche match, but it stands out to me as a favorite because it was part of my first WrestleMania. I watched it with mom and dad at Walter Brown Arena on closed circuit TV. Nice. And this wasn't the match that hooked me on wrestling in the moment, but it's the standout match from that show. The moment that hooked me on wrestling was the Hulk Hogan promo with Vince McMahon.
Well, you know, they said it was my last ride, man. Yesterday when I finished hanging and banging, when I jumped on the Harley, man, as I went through the intersection, as I headed for the mountains, some of the non-believers in the gym said, "See you later, Hulkster, man. This is your last ride." ate me alive, brothers. When I felt the fury as I ripped, as I tore the shirt, as I headed for the sunset, man, I looked down, brothers, and as the sun beamed off the gold in my eyes, I realized that sooner or later, you gotta live and die and you gotta face the truth. And for you, Andre the Giant, it's time to face the truth, brother. Because when I think about what you and I have to do, man, what I have to do is nothing. All I have to do is merely beat a 7'4", 550-pound giant. But Andre, you gotta face the truth, brother. In its purest form, man. The purest truth there is, man. The training, the saying, the prayers, the eating, the vitamins. And to beat me, man, you've got to beat every Hulkamaniac, every little Hulkster in the world, everyone that plays it straight, all the ones that don't take any shortcuts, brother. And they usually say, if the dirty air don't get you, the politicians will. But in this case, it's going to be Hulkamania. And the reason it's going to get you, man, it's the purest form of the truth there is. And I can't wait to see you go down at the feet of Hulkamania in front of 90,000 plus in the Silver Dome. What you gonna do, Andre the Giant, when the real truth, the 24-inch pythons and Hulkamania runs wild on you?
I thought for Savage and Steamboat, this was just about 15 minutes of innovative TV wrestling. Gorilla and Jesse were amazing on commentary. And little known fact,
yep,
the first ever wrestling-related interview I did was with Ricky the Dragon Steamboat.
Oh, wow.
And it was at Wonderland Greyhound Park. It was during my college days. I was an intern for the Big Show, Ordway's Big Show, and it was before, yep, a Chaotic Wrestling Show with Jim the Wrestling Goon. If you're,
longtime
sports radio listeners remember Jim the Wrestling Goon, invited me to this show, and I got to talk to Ricky Steamboat. It's on a cassette tape at my parents' house. I'm sure it's still there. At the time, he told me, and I'm sure he's told others in interviews, that Savage and Steamboat, they wrote out hundreds of steps for the match because Randy Savage was such a detail-oriented person, he wanted to make sure that this match was perfect. And Steamboat told me, and I'm sure other people, that they would challenge each other on steps on the road to their WrestleMania match so that they were in sync with, this is going here, this is going here, this is going here, which is a credit to Steamboat the performer, because for years he would have matches with Ric Flair where they would know three things, and one of them was the finish, and they'd work everything else around the feel of the crowd, which is what is just so different about wrestling nowadays. I think the last called in the ring match that I know of on a big spot was CM Punk versus John Cena at Money in the Bank in 2011, where Punk walks out of Chicago as the WWE champion. And that's because John's like, Punk, this is your night. Call it in the ring. And Punk's like, of course I'll call it in the ring. I love calling it in the ring. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the emotion of that match. Mm-hmm. And this was a step-by-step documented match. And the match was excellent. And the crowd was with it. On two different occasions, the crowd went nuts for what they thought was a three count and a Steamboat championship win. But the real key to this match, and most really good matches, is they used elements of the story leading up to the match in the match. The use of the ring bell, George Steele's infatuation with Elizabeth, and just because Steamboat and Savage are top-notch, great performers. So they all use those in elements of the match, and Ricky Steamboat wins the Intercontinental Championship. Just an awesome, awesome match from my perspective.
And like you said, it's people may say it's replayed a lot, but it is right up there with maybe the greatest WrestleMania match of all time. You know, first time ever, too, that an Intercontinental Championship changed hands at a WrestleMania, too. So there you go. The history in the making right there. Largest indoor crowd at the time.
And Fred Toucher.
Yeah. Toucher was there. That's right. Yep. So much on that whole pay-per-view.
And technically being at the Walter Brown closed circuit, I'm part of that 93,000 plus crowd.
Absolutely you are. You bought a ticket.
My parents bought a ticket, but yeah. Which I think they still have. I think my parents still have that ticket stub.
Nice. Love it.
It was like $5 or $10, but of course the cost of living was different, so it was much cheaper. But
what a time to be alive.
That was back in the days where when you ordered a pay-per-view, you had to go to the cable company. I think it was Cablevision, and you had to get a special box.
Yes.
To get the pay-per-view.
That's right.
Until they later made it so that people who had cable boxes could just make a phone call and they could zap it, or there were other ways of working around it, like in the black box era.
Which then, of course, brought in the pre-show of make sure you call right now because you don't want to miss this live here tonight.
The WWF free-for-all.
The free-for-all, exactly.
Yep.
So what a time to be alive.
So your match is Austin versus Rock at WrestleMania 19. Mine is WrestleMania 3, yep. Steamboat versus Savage. We will have more of this as our road to WrestleMania continues. We will be back next week. We'll have a recap of AEW's pay-per-view. We'll have a recap of what happened in WWE between SmackDown in Boston and their Saudi show. And this is the road to WrestleMania, so we're on board for it. Each week you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 985thesportshub.com and on the 985 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. For Mike Riley at Sarge985, the show's Twitter account is at WrestleCast985. You can follow me on Twitter at IamJamesStewart, and we will be back with you next week.